This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It's one of the most striking features of the waterfront in Marquette, the Upper Harbor Ore Dock. It reminds us of bygone days when the new mining town wasn't even big enough to be considered a city. Fred Stonehouse is with us now. Fred's a maritime historian. Fred, just what is an ore dock? We probably better start with that.
An ore dock is a structure designed for the very rapid shipment of bulk commodities, in this case, iron ore.
So we're going back how far? When did mining actually start around Marquette?
Well, Marquette, the city of, actually started because of the discovery of iron ore back in 1844 in the hills west of Ishpeming, Nagani area. And then Marquette developed as the shipping port for that, about 20 miles distance. So the iron ore movement through the city of Marquette really began about 1849 or so in any quantity.
Long before the Civil War.
Long before. And in fact, during the American Civil War, the bulk of the iron ore used by the Union armies came out of the city of Marquette. It was considered to be such a vital commodity and such a vital port that an armed vessel was stationed in the port at all times.
And how long until the companies began building ore docks?
Well, the dock, the concept of an ore dock was first constructed in Marquette in 1858, and that was the first one in the world. And the problem they were having was how you had to move this very heavy product again and again and again. I think I counted the 8 different movements, if you will, iterations in moving the product between the mine and ultimately the mill. And the ore dock allowed that to happen very quickly. So in other words, it could be put on the train right at the iron mine. It could be brought through town up into a large wooden trestle on top of this structure called an ore dock. And then because the cars were hopper cars, in other words, had the chute in the bottom, they were able to open the bottom of the car. The iron ore then would drop down into a large metal pocket, a bin, if you will. And then when the ships came in, they would simply moor up against the ore dock. The different chutes would go down and pull the pin literally on the bottom of the bin, and then all of the iron ore would truddle in very nicely into the ship.
Well, I'm thinking of just going to the grocery store where they have bulk candy and bulk nuts, and it's kind of the same idea. Open it up.
It works exactly the same, just on a huge scale.
Yeah. So much easier than the back-breaking work of moving it around that they had at the beginning.
Well, at one point, they were loading it by the wheelbarrow full.
Oh.
And imagine trying to do that, and then, of course, unloading it at the other sites out in Cleveland, for example, the same way and bringing it out of the hole one bucket at a time. So the ability of the dock to load quickly became very important.
And at the peak of mining activity, Fred, how many ore docks were in Marquette?
Well, at the very peak, we were operating 3 separate docks simultaneously from Marquette's lower harbor, which is the harbor in town. And then later, there would be a 4th dock added up in Presque Isle, Marquette's upper harbor.
And what's there today? For those who have not seen them and are maybe will be planning a trip, what will we see?
I think you're going to see a couple things that are very, very unique. You're going to see in the upper harbor at Presque Isle Park, right next to the park, a functioning iron ore dock that's been in business since 1912. And that will ship about 400 shiploads a year of iron pellets at this point, no longer raw iron ore rock. And that is unique because it's the only one in the Great Lakes where people can actually get up very close to and be able to take tremendous photographs of. They're so close that they can see the train pulling in on top of the structure. They can hear the ore fumbling down into the holding bins. They can watch the boat come in. They can see the chutes come down. They can hear the terrific rumble of those pellets as they go down the cargo holds, literally see the red dust come up from the impact of those pellets. It is the closest people will ever come to that type of activity anywhere in the Great Lakes.
You know, it really does take us back to, you know, things that we take for granted. The iron in building and in industrial products, that it's a wonderful way to remember it all comes out of the ground.
Comes out of the ground. And then when you ratchet that back and you realize that Marquette was really right in the middle of the Industrial Revolution, because that's where the iron was coming from that would make the steel, that would make all of the products that you just mentioned.
Now, there's a real cool way to know when the ships are coming in called Automatic Identification System. What is that and how is it used?
Well, the AIS, there's a requirement that every commercial freighter, every commercial vessel, quite literally in the world, have this little transmitter box on the bridge that automatically transmits out to a range of, let's say, 25 miles. The details on that particular ship. It tells it where it's going, It tells you what it's carrying. It tells you when it was built. It tells you when it expects to arrive at its destination, the speed it's making, the course it's making. And the original concept came about after 9/11, so it would become a security mechanism for the fleet of knowing what everybody else was doing. But what it's morphed into is people that like to watch the ore boats, for example, can download a little application for their smartphone or do it on a regular computer, too, that will show you where every boat is in the world, quite literally, and you can zoom in to the ones you're interested in and then track them when they're coming and when they're going. For example, to the ore docks in Marquette, through the Sioux Locks, when they're arriving and going through the St. Clair River, the Detroit River, et cetera.
That's cool. Automatic identification system.
And those are free. It's just a number of different companies offer the app, for example, and just go on online, go on whatever your shopping network is on the phone and pick one up.
Mm-mm. Now, that Lower Harbor ore dock across town, as you were saying, no longer functioning, but certainly has deep roots in the community. And you were telling us that it was actually built too small?
Yeah, they built that 1931, which, of course, makes it a much newer dock than the 1812 dock. But they built it too small. The one up at Presque Isle is 1,200 foot long. This one's only about 800 foot. They built it in a very congested area of the harbor. So as the ships got bigger, they had difficulty getting up to the dock. And as the ships grew in size, they also didn't have the right angle for the chutes coming in to be able to load the ore from the dock. Mm-hmm. So it really became obsolete and was abandoned, essentially, in 1971. The city of Marquette at that point obtained the dock as well as other property from the railroad, and it's currently still owned by the city.
Does it have any practical purpose at all, or is it just more for the look?
It has yes and no. The practical purpose it has is that it serves as a massive windbreak for the lower harbor. So it protects shipping that's on the north side of the harbor. And there's a number of marinas in there that really rely on that dock to cut the wind down. The other value that it has is just such a very powerful visual reminder of the city's maritime past and our heritage. It has become, in many ways, an icon, certainly of the city of Marquette.
It is a lovely way to think of history and from whence we came.
And you can twist that a little bit differently, too, because there used to be, I hate that term, but a huge wooden trestle that would go all the way through town to get the rail cars up to the top of the dock. The dock's about 80 foot high. Mm. And that trestle divided South Marquette from North Marquette. And the expression on the other side of the tracks was absolutely correct. In fact, we even had two fire stations, one on either side of the tracks in case a train was there and you couldn't get the fire engines to the fire. So when the ore dock went out of business and the city obtained the rights to it and the ownership of it, that trestle all came down, the tracks came up, so you really united two sides of the city. And to make that just a little different, the trackage then was incorporated into the city's bike path system. So we've got about 17 miles of it now. So now you're using that right-of-way from the railroad to really tie the city together instead of dividing it as it once had done.
A wonderful look at the ore docks of Marquette, and anyone visiting now, when you see that 17-mile bike path, you're going to have some real insight as to where it all came from. Fred Stonehouse, you really made it come alive. We really appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about a structure like that and to get people excited about coming on up and seeing it and understanding not only the industrial past and the maritime past of Marquette, but really all of the Great Lakes.
Fred Stonehouse, thank you so much for speaking with us.
You're very welcome.